Who are you?
You almost understand, don't you, Bill? You're a different race from us, a different species, a different class. You're not one of us. You have to be born into society. It's a matter of good breeding, really.
Hello and welcome to Terrorvision. This time we're going to be talking about society. I'm joined by my good friend Brad Pearson.
Hello.
And my other good friends Alex Horob, who we refer to as Horob, and Ben Hansen.
Hi. My face doesn't quite feel like it belongs on my face.
Perhaps if it doesn't belong on your face, it belongs on your butt.
Yes!
That's a little society-based humor for you.
By the end of this podcast, Evan will get that joke, because they're probably going to listen to it two or three times. So
in case you don't know, we're talking about the wonderful film Society today.
Society, which came out in 1989, and was directed by the one, the only Brian Yuzna, who we'll get into more later. But as we start, we should do our ceremonial attempt to give a synopsis of the film in one sentence. So we'll start with you, Brad.
Society, much like They Live, is an anti-Reagan statement, but where Roddy Piper kicked ass and chewed bubblegum, Billy Warlock nearly became bubblegum.
Woohoo! That's hard to beat.
All right, Ben?
You deballs me. I was gonna do a variation on the first one, which was like Reagan era Beverly Hills has never been so obvious or literal again, but that's just terrible compared to Brad's.
Horror, go.
Rich people are awful, and everything is incestuous.
Society is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful movie. Really, I'd never heard of it before. I don't think it's available on DVD at the moment. I read about it on this amazing blog called The House of Self-Indulgence, which I don't think there's going to be a single film we cover on Terrorvision that hasn't already been covered on The House of Self-Indulgence.
So really, don't listen to us and just read that website.
Basically, yeah. So, okay, going through some facts about Society, it's directed by Brian Yuzna, who got his start kind of producing Stuart Gordon's films. He produced Reanimator and Dolls and From Beyond. And he also directed Bride of Reanimator and the atrocious Beyond Reanimator.
How's Bride of Reanimator? What are your thoughts?
It's good. I like it. It's not as good as the first one, but it's far better than it should be. And it's so much closer to Reanimator than Beyond Reanimator on the scale.
A few more notes about Yuzna. He also co-produced Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
The TV show?
No, the film. The original film. He also directed Silent Night, Deadly Night 4, and both films of the Dentist series, and Return of the Living Dead 2.
Woohoo!
Ow.
God, the Dentist wouldn't be half bad.
I guess I can see Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, because there is that hideous scorpion in it that's just, like, terrifying and horrible.
The Dentist.
Do you have any problem with the Honey sequels? I guess if that's what you want to call them.
Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, and Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves.
No, he has no connection to the sequel, Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, or the straight-to-video third film, Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves. He has no connection to those films. So anyway, Society is kind of about this this Beverly Hills dude and his extremely hoity-toity rich family, and he kind of has the sense that he doesn't fit in with them for some reason.
Yeah, primarily when, you know, he's peeping at his sister in the shower and, you know, getting aroused by it, only to see that her boobs and her buttocks are facing the same direction.
Awesome scene.
Awesome. I loved it.
Although it's really weird.
It is not only creepy because she's backwards, it's creepy because he is genuinely into it.
And
then she opens it up and she's normal and she's creaked out and he's like, oh, I was grabbing this.
So basically the first, like, hour and 15 minutes of the film or so are just very much classic 80s teen movie storyline of him trying to get with the popular kids to impress a girl and not fitting in with his family and all that stuff.
With a you know, pretty obvious creepy factor slipping underneath, which I like quite a bit. And much, you know, Brad's comparison to They Live is really apropos because the movie doesn't try for subtlety of any sort. It's trying to bash these people, and
yeah,
which is good. I think it works.
The best thing about it is how extremely blatant it is about just saying, rich people are awful. That's all. There's nothing subtle about that at all, and it's just great. Again, like They Live. Now, the male lead of the character, have you guys seen him anything before?
No, I haven't. I couldn't decide whether it was John Stamos or like a lost Estevez, but neither.
The missing Estevez. It turns out that he actually was one of the main characters on Baywatch after that. And he also appeared in 235 episodes of General Hospital and 212 episodes of Days of Our Lives.
Jesus!
So, you know, society brought him to the world of soap operas, apparently. I like the thought that, though, the people working on Days of Our Lives were sitting around watching Society, and they're like, we need this guy.
Then there's the guy who's like obsessed with his sister and who's like recording her, and he has conspiracy theories about her.
Yeah, and he's kind of the main signifier that there's something terrifying happening underneath the surface of this this picturesque Beverly Hills community. And there's a great scene where he's trying to get the attention of the main character to tell him there's something wrong with his family, and he plays a recording of his family. And it's just this amazing recording.
Wow, your boobs look totally sexy. Guys are going to pop high ones the second they see you. I'm a little nervous, though. Fine. Oh, relax, Jenny. Just go with it. It's so much fun to see how far you can stretch. Yeah, the hotter and wetter you get, the more you can do. It's great.
It's so matter-of-fact and weird.
It sounds like a priest rehearsing them through a wedding rehearsal.
What a great movie, let me just add.
Yeah, it's awesome. And, you know, like it's great that like one of the main heroes of the story, like one of the, you know, the likable people in the story, it turns out to, you know, he's the guy who in the beginning is hiding in a girl's closet and, you know, being like Mr. Creeper extraordinaire.
The two good guys are pervs. I mean, they really are. It's not like, oh man, we're sort of confused. They're genuinely turned on by this stuff.
So
perverts up and rich people down.
I agree with all of that. So the film kind of dabbles in this story about this kid who's seeing a therapist. He doesn't feel right in his place, but it's kind of just a teenage thing, trying to get with the girl, got the high-class bullies making fun of him. And that's really 90% of what you're seeing for the first hour and 15 minutes or so of the film. And luckily, I think it's a really entertaining build-up in its own right. But Brad, you said that when you were first checking it out, you kind of were nonplussed by what you were seeing.
I think it felt too long or something, and the extremely creepy scenes just didn't quite. It looked more like a suspense movie, but it wasn't tight enough for a suspense movie in the first like hour or so, and. I mean, I guess, you know, if anybody's watching this movie for the first time, my advice is to just stick with it because, like, it's not quite a suspense movie. It has, you know, it has a completely different type of payoff in the end of the movie. I mean, it shifts gears, you know, in like a, it's already a pretty weird movie, but like in the last like 20 minutes or so, it just shifts gears in like a Barton Fink kind of way. It's completely turns around.
And yeah, it kind of is amazing how well it holds back all this amazing stuff it has to offer for the whole first two acts of the film. And I think it's actually very impressive.
I liked it that way. I thought it was a really good build-up. And the joke that Ben and I had is, you know, it had this regular sort of thing, and then all of a sudden you'd see the scene where the sister's body was twisted up, or he's making out with the girl, and there's just this extra hand and her legs, like, sticking out in this weird bent position. And the joke was that Cronenberg just sort of snuck in there and directed a scene. And everyone got upset. They go, "Well, what are you doing? Get out of here!" And he had to run off. Like, he's this force of nature in movies. That once he films a scene, it just has to be in there. And then by the end of it, he just completely hijacked it.
Now, from what I remember, there's the main female protagonist, who's the girl that he wants to get together with. But there's also the other girl who kind of has the creepy mom, correct?
No, that girl is the girl with the creepy mom. The girl he wants to get wit.
Has the creepy mom, which is really weird.
And
but
great.
It's also there's also his sister.
The girl he's trying to get with, she got her start on Star Search. Do you guys remember Star Search?
Of course.
Yeah, kind of. Well, she ended up with on Married with Children, right?
Yeah. And she was also in the 80s classic Can't Buy Me Love. And she also appeared in Citizen Toxie, Toxie Adventure 4, which I know you guys have seen.
I've seen. Which, does she play Toxie's wife? Oh my god, she plays this blind wife. She does. Oh, that role's fucking awesome. She gets impregnated in the first 15 minutes of the movie.
So...
When in speaking about the large amount of buildup in the movie, I actually did think they could have sprinkled throughout the movie some more of the amazing stuff, the amazing effect stuff towards the end, and all that great payoff, because you knew something very strange was coming. I don't mean to be critical of the movie, because the movie is absolutely fantastic. I'm just saying throwing a little bit here, there, and everywhere, I think would have been even better and have a big climax towards the end. And I'm maybe giving an unfair comparison towards They Live, because They Live throws in the amazing stuff pretty consistently, like throughout the movie, and gets it like more and more and more crazy to climax it. Whereas Society kind of holds back and then just really lets it rip in the last 20 minutes. It's just a different format, but I think I prefer They Live's.
Another good example actually is Reanimator, which he produced and he did the sequel for, because Reanimator starts normal for about 10 minutes and then just ups the ante and ups the ante and ups the ante all the way till the end. Whereas, this one has a completely different setup where it holds back for the entire time and then just explodes with craziness at the end.
It's just, it's really great that, like, that kind of movie got made, especially, you know, especially in the Reagan era, in the midst of this extremely conservative political atmosphere. And if you look at other horror movies that were getting made around that kind of time, you know, you get these real kind of punitive, very, very kind of conservative messages in like Friday the 13th films, which basically equate premarital sex with a grisly death. And then you get Society, on the other hand, that's just literally calling, you know, upper class folks monsters and aliens who will eat your flesh.
What's kind of
not even in like a zombie way. They like merge to you. Oh, man, it's great.
What's kind of interesting about that is that a lot of the kind of, like, films that are regarded as classics of the genre, outside of John Carpenter, are quite conservative, whereas films like this that are kind of more, have more of a liberal slant are kind of thrown to the wayside and not nearly as frequently referenced.
That's true. I mean, few people know about this movie. Most people do point to the Friday the 13th and, like, Wes Craven productions, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street and Last House on the Left and... things like that.
And Last House on the Left, you know, I have a soft spot for it, but it does have an extremely conservative kind of revenge message to it.
It has not only an extremely conservative message, you know, in like the violent revenge of the parents, but in the fact that it's all brought on by these girls, you know, adventuring. Like, if they hadn't tried to buy weed off those dudes, they wouldn't have ended up getting, like, raped and murdered in the woods. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's how you can pitch these things, because, you know, if you're pitching this to an audience or studio, you know, with the, like, Friday the 13th, you go, oh my god, these kids are in the woods, they're behaving poorly, this mass killer comes and hacks them to death. It's a really easy pitch. You go, yeah, I understand how people like this. You pitch Society, you have this guy who's creeping on his family, you got, you know, people with voyeuristic tendencies, and it all culminates with rich people fusing into this giant flesh blob. I mean, it's hard to pitch and sell to most people.
And
definitely, it is hard to pitch. And, you know, and Brian Yuzna, like, you know, is very iconoclastic in that way, because none of his movies are very sellable to, you know, a large studio or a large audience. They've always had kind of a cult following, you know.
And tellingly, Society actually did extremely poorly in the U.S. and did very well in Europe. People in the U.S. didn't care about it, thought it was kind of a joke, didn't take it seriously, didn't see it. And in Europe, it did substantially better in cinemas.
Did both critics in America?
I'm not certain how critics responded to it.
I will note, though, and I'd love to find it if they exist, when you're talking about how, you know, that this movie could be made during the Reagan era, I can point to the exact equivalence of the conservative horror genre that you're talking about during the Bush era. I mean, Saw is the immediate one, followed, you know, Hostel, on and so forth. And even the remakes of the 80s stuff, which are so dead serious and such, you know, gore fest. but I can't find the equivalent now of Society or Reanimator or any of those.
Well,
now,
that's the thing, is they don't make anything like this anymore. I think the closest thing that gets made to this, like, you know, in just the combination of humor and kind of, you know, tongue-in-cheek humor and sort of anti-authoritarianism and just utter grotesqueness, I think the only thing that comes to mind is Tim and Eric. And, you know, nothing in horror movies is doing this. Nothing, I don't think, in any movie is doing this.
Well, Japanese horror movies, you could get that, you know, where you get the, you know, the cheap budget, the very fun, schlocky sort of thing. Machine Girl.
That's true. Stuff like Machine Girl and Tokyo Gore Police are kind of similar. They're not nearly as smart, but they're similar in how fun and disgusting they are. And also, there are a couple of contemporary horror films that attempt to kind of carry the torch of 80s horror, such as The House of the Devil and even Slither, which is written by James Gunn, who actually wrote the Dawn of the Dead remake, which is one of the worst pieces of crap ever and is also terribly conservative. But to its credit, Slither's a pretty good film and pretty fun, and actually is a pretty good kind of facsimile of 80s horror.
Well, there is Cabin Fever that, you know, does kind of that is extremely playful and has that kind of weird Herschel Gordon Lewis ending with all the hillbillies playing banjo.
Actually, speaking on that, there's this terrific film comment article that talks about how almost all of contemporary horror is extremely conservative. Even filmmakers like Eli Roth, who, like you were saying, in Cabin Fever and even the Hostel films, I think he's under the impression that he's presenting a kind of liberal thing because it's kind of anti these rich people who murder people. But at the same time, their messages and their content are actually extremely conservative.
He's always been kind of a confusing guy for me. Because there is this sort of liberal slant to it in that, it's about Americanism or American imperialism kind of fucking the world and, you know, the chickens coming home to roost on, on these kids who are just going off on this hedonistic adventure and taking advantage of countries and cultures they don't understand. And also, you know, there's sort of this human trafficking kind of, I don't know, degradation of a person's humanity, reducing a person to a product kind of thing to it. But I mean, it does have, I'm not sure what it is exactly that does have kind of a conservative feel to it, but I mean, it is there.
I think I know, I mean, the conservative slant, I think the difference, if you take specifically Society and then specifically Hostel, whereas the rich people in Society merge in a giant blob, which is also funny because of how absurd it is, which is, the equivalent of just, you know, sort of farting in rich people's faces and saying, there, that's what you deserve, because you're
right. Disgusting. I mean, it has that sort of Louis Bunuel kind of absurdism to it that's, you know, poignant and sort of, you know, self-effacing in how silly it is.
Or as you know, in Hostel, you're supposed to be enjoying how realistic the rich people's torture is, and you know,
it's a very confused film thematically and politically. But luckily, Society exists. You know,
can we get to the climax? I mean, I think that's the most important part we need to talk about.
Sure. So anyway, as you probably, whether you've seen the film or not, you'll probably be under the understanding that at a certain point, the film develops into this amazingly incredible gore and latex finale.
Which, also importantly, is the effects are done by the person who did the effects for John Carpenter's incarnation of The Thing, which is some of the best special effects around.
Yeah, although I'm not sure.
Rob Bottin?
I'm not sure if it's specifically the same guy, but at least someone from that staff. There is a connection there. Yes, because you said you were reading a BFI monograph on The Thing that mentions Society.
Yeah, that specifically, I actually specifically thought like the main effects artist who worked on The Thing didn't do too much afterwards, but did work on a little scene movie called Society and has a great picture of the fellow who goes,
"Let me give you a hand, Bill."
With a hand for a head.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's when I became interested in the movie.
Did you enjoy the irony of, I think it's just about his final line, that Billy Warlock's character, he says, he does like a a one-liner and it ends with butthead. Calls the guy a butthead and then walks out all cool.
Oh yeah, and then later it comes back and he's like,
"Well, son, I guess you're right. I am a butthead." Hey, Bill.
His face coming out of his ass. It's wonderful.
Unlike the last movie that we were just talking about that you weren't here for, Brad, was called Terrorvision, which has all these, as maybe potentially more like great ideas in number, but absolutely no execution, where society has utterly perfect execution, with my only slight exception might be that the girl that he's interested in is one of the members of society, and she does have all the weird freakish things going on within her body or whatever else. And the movie just kind of ends with him being okay with it and going away with her, which I'm generally fine with because I don't want another section of the movie. But did you guys like that?
I did not like that. I did not like the, you know, that like he, the, that was kind of, that seemed too kind of Hollywood-y, that like him and his buddy and his girl all get away and ride off into the sunset. Whereas, like, I would have been, you know, and maybe this is just me, I would have been the most satisfied, I think, if like, they all just got devoured.
I mean, even but, in The Live, they get killed by the aliens.
One thing, the rules of the film are not quite clear, because you have the other guy with the recording who's not a member of society, and you have the buddy who's, and all that stuff. So there are a few people who are distinctly not members of society, even though it's kind of said that it should be that the kid, the main character, is the only member who's not a member of this thing. So it's not really clear, but it doesn't really matter, but it's just kind of slightly confusing.
That I'm a lot more okay with, because there's no element of sellout there, whereas Brad, I think, is right. Their stuff is, I'm glad they left the rules a little ambiguous, because otherwise we've had whole scenes of people explaining rules of the, you know, the game, and I don't really care about that, because it's an excuse for effects and society.
Yeah, well, for how, like, kind of screwed up the movie is and how surreal everything is, there's very little exposition as to what's actually going on. You just sort of see it unfold, which is, I think is great.
You just sort of get the trailer line, you know.
Didn't you know, Billy Boy? The rich have always sucked off low-class shit like you.
Which is just so great.
I don't know. It had that, like, did it remind anybody else of Rosemary's Baby? Like, right at the end, there's this sort of...
Oh, yeah, when they're coming out saying...
All the people who have been conspiring against the main character all just sort of drop the act and tell them, like, what's up. And they're like, well, we've got you where we want you, and yes, we're evil. And, like, that's it. And, like, that's... And it's kind of too late at that point, which is it's just amazing.
Much like Rosemary's Baby, they do the same motif where they all kind of congratulate each other on another great play.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Everyone was just wonderful.
In Rosemary's Baby, it was the ultimate, like, you know, Satan has come back to Earth, but, and they only did that once, but in society, they imply they do this frequently to different people, and they actually kind of applaud each other as, you know, having done really well acting the part.
You are both absolutely brilliant.
Well done. Well done indeed. Effective, efficient. And to say the very least... entertaining.
And confirming all the paranoia. Yeah, I really like that stuff.
Quick note, just as we haven't mentioned yet, the bully villain, who I think is awesome in this film.
The old guy?
No.
No, the teenager has the leather.
Make waves with you, you're gonna drown.
See, now, I need to specifically mention that because there's a lot of great lines in the movie that if this weren't a movie about aliens, or just rich people being horrible mutant monster things that feed off the poor, it still has great fucking moments like if you're going to make waves, you're going to get wet, and then they shove them into a pool. There's lines like that all over the place in the movie.
Oh, yeah,
there's a lot of really just fun, funny lines, which is why I was pretty much entirely okay with the build-up, because it's entertaining by itself without... you know, what you know is going to be a big payoff. And thankfully, the movie doesn't disappoint with its payoff.
Yeah.
There's one thing that we just touched on very briefly, but we never actually talked about it. What was up with the girlfriend's mom?
Oh, that's right. Well, what was wrong with her?
That's really unclear and weird.
The whole movie was weird, but she was a different kind of weird where I go, is this supposed to be funny?
Oh, or... she's got that whole like weird John Waters character thing going on.
Yeah,
right?
She's like hatchet face.
Yeah. That is weird. That was super bizarre. That kind of came out of left field. She's like entranced with that guy's hair, and she's like semi-retarded, and like,
yeah,
but she's kind of good too. But like, she helps them out or something.
And it's not clear whether it's accidental or not. I have a theory about her, which is similar to a terrible, terrible, wonderful cult Sean Connery called Zardoz, which maybe we should do, in which there's these Eternals who are like rule over society, and they have an entire room of people who are. They're so sick of being superior to the lower class that they've gone crazy. So those that have maintained their sanity have just sort of kept them locked up in a room by themselves. I thought maybe she was supposed to represent like a member of society who's fallen out of favor because they become alcoholics or their stocks have fallen or so on and so forth. So they all know her, but they never really reference her. However, I don't really think that's conveyed very well by the movie. I think she's just kind of hanging around. She's still a little bit confusing, but I think that maybe it was what they were going for. I don't know. Did you guys get that at all?
I think it was definitely one of the less successful elements of the film. It doesn't sink my opinion of the film, but it is kind of almost distracting in how unsuccessful it is.
You know, it didn't distract me at all because the rest of the movie was so good that I assumed it was all going to pay off, and because literally everything else did. I think she's the only thread that doesn't come to a conclusion. I don't really realize
for the most part she's forgettable until you start talking about it afterwards. You forget she exists as a character.
And what she have in her purse when she first came to the room when they were porking? It's like hair or something, a wig or I don't know.
I thought she pulled off part of the guy's hair, like she cut it off.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean to change topics again, but we're speaking about walking out and then porking. He totally does this chick, well, I think he has a girlfriend at the high school, and then that's okay, there's no consequences for it, there's so many boobs. Dear 80s, why are you the only decade? Well, 70s too. Point being, I want more boobs.
I want more boobs too.
It's sure, the movie really does deliver.
Do you think there's going to be any boobs in Saw 3D?
No, and I want nipples. Out in 3D at me for my $9.
It's more than $9, but it's 3D.
God damn it.
Okay, so anything else you guys want to mention about the film before we do our Netflix ratings?
I don't know. It's a great movie. Stick with it. Find it. See it if you can. It's hard to find, but it's totally worth it.
I think it's a deeply underrated. I think it's actually one of the better films of that kind of subgenre.
It should absolutely be a midnight movie. I have no idea why I don't see it on a midnight movie.
Yeah, you know, we need to make this happen.
Consider it already done.
All right.
Absolutely. That's a great idea.
Okay, so because of with Netflix ratings being as they are with no half stars, I'm going to give it a solid high 3 stars.
Three?
What?
3 stars?
Three?
It's a high 3. 3 means I liked it. I really
let's all stone Toby to death.
Oh.
So saying that Toby's wrong, I mean, but if I have to, I'm going 5. I mean, I enjoyed the hell out of the movie. I would love to watch it many more times.
I'm gonna go. I have 4.5 as well. I'm gonna default to 4 because, like I said, I think like for some reason They Live kind of gives me the structure that I want more than this, and it's in a similar vein, but damn, it's a strong 4 stars, and I do want to watch it again.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree. I'd go 4 stars. It's almost a perfect movie. I think, like, if I just... I think next time I watch it, I'm going to like it even more. The first time, I think, like, I don't know if I was just distracted. I had to turn the movie off and go do something else. So, like, I couldn't really sink in and enjoy it as much. And, you know, it's only 100 minutes. So it's not like it's actually, you know, it's very hard to make a movie that length tedious. Yeah, definitely 4 stars. It didn't quite get to 5, whereas I think They Live or a movie like House, you know, like where you're just smiling through the entire thing. Yeah, 4 stars.
You know, I agree, and you know what? I bet this movie gets a lot better on repeat viewings because you remember the ending so well because it's amazing and this amazing effects show and it's this big payoff. But because everything is so like sly and creepy, that I'm pretty sure it's the kind of humor that would get better watched multiple times, whereas wear off having watched multiple times. I might be wrong, but I think it'd be a good repeat.
Yeah, whereas something like Terrorvision probably would not be a good repeat.
No.
So yeah, let's you know, highly recommend you watch it. And,
I recommend that we conclude this podcast. You should play us out with the Society song.
I don't know what that means, to play us out.
All right. To play us out, the song from Society.